Welcome back, everybody, to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to create top five list. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today, we're going to be creating a top five list on games that we are thankful for.
Yes, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, we want to kind of sit down and reflect on what we are grateful to have in our gaming lives. And Josh and I decided, you know, let's talk about the games that have made an impact on us and why we're just super happy that they exist.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this because you're going to get some like deep lore into my gaming like mindset and like what games really like. These aren't my favorite games of all time. However, these are games that I'm just so grateful and thankful for that they exist, because without them, who knows what would have happened, you know what I mean, in the world of yeah. My life.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, my list is very much going to be a list of like personal connections. These are games that, because they exist, I managed to forge friendships or learn things about myself. And I just wanted to share them and talk about how I'm just so glad these got developed for whatever reasons I reveal. So
yeah,
that's my logic.
I'm really excited for this. So number five on my list is a game about a superhero. And the reason there's this game is because for years we have had superhero games. All the way back on the Atari, we had superhero games. On the NES, on the Genesis, all of these systems had superhero games in it. But only one of them ever made you feel like an actual superhero. And that was Batman Arkham Asylum. I never felt like Batman as a kid growing up wanting to be Batman because Batman was the coolest, right? No game ever made me feel like Batman, or I never ever felt like Batman before until I played Arkham Asylum. And I think that game is just, I'm so thankful for this game to come into our lives, because we wouldn't have had anything probably until the Spider-Man game, but we don't even know if that would have, because I mean, it's got a lot of its like charm from those games.
Yeah, the DNA of Batman, from what I've seen of Spider-Man, is very visible, especially in the combat, things like that. But I agree with you completely. Arkham is a just quite definitive game of its era. Arguably one of the best, if not in like a top five, top three tier of that entire PS3, Xbox 360, Wii console generation is just incredible. As I've said previously on the show, I think that is the best of the Rocksteady 3D Batman games, but you know, we can dive deeper later for other reasons. But it's, you know, I agree with you completely. It's quite an immersive game with one of the more interesting and just engaging Batman stories. And when did you start working for IGN? Because you said quite a lot that you felt like Batman.
honestly,
are you collecting
though,
paychecks
like,
that you're not sharing with me?
I know. And it's such a easy thing to say, but you tell me though, when you played that, you didn't feel like the Dark Knight.
Oh, my voice got all gravelly, you know, and I started being sad and I turned all the lights off so I could be in total darkness.
Listen,
absolutely.
The closest, like the game that we had before it was Batman Dark Tomorrow. Okay. We went from Batman Dark Tomorrow to Arkham Asylum. I am extremely thankful for Batman Arkham Asylum.
Hey, I can say as a big Batman nerd that it's a hell of a pick. Also grateful that it exists. So excellent. Very cool.
Number five, Tom.
So my number five is on this list because of it broke for me a certain barrier in my gaming life. And the game is Overwatch, and the reason I'm thankful for it is because it finally opened me up to PC gaming. There was just, for the longest stretch of my life, PC games were just alien to me. When my family, you know, bought the first computer, my dad very curtly said, you know, I did not just spend $1,200 on another PlayStation for you, so no games are on this. So I never had anything. I never had Diablo, I never had The Sims, I never had all of these seminal titles.
Rollercoaster Tycoon.
Nope, nothing, because I wasn't allowed. My consoles were all I was allowed to play stuff on. And I'm curious if you feel this. Did you ever have growing up, like, when you were forbidden from something by your parents, you basically formed this personality trait of like, well, if I can't interact with it, it must be bad. It must suck. So I'm just going to hate on it because that'll be a defense mechanism for the fact that I can't do it, you know? And that for me kind of evolved into like PC gaming sucks, you know?
Tom, well, see, the thing is, though, growing up, I did a lot of PC gaming. And I've transitioned over the opposite way, which, I mean, I still play consoles and stuff like that. But Tom, you know, my parental figures, you know that they probably didn't care about whatever the hell I did growing up in my life. So
I was not trying to get that raw on the podcast, but I'm just saying in general, you
there's not that much taboo stuff. And no, I mean, I would figure that is a mindset because I do remember my dad always saying that the Mega Man games suck. And I never played a Mega Man game till the Mega Man Anniversary Collection came out on the GameCube. When I was like, you know what? I'm going to try it. And I loved them. And I was like, oh, I thought these games suck. I thought these games were terrible. And then that something like that happened. But yeah, so you got hooked into PC gaming because of Overwatch now? Or?
Yep. My friend Joe bought me a digital copy because like members of my friend circle were like playing it and I was playing it on console and he was just like, well, you can't play with us on a console, like so he was like, I'll just buy you a copy and you can pay it back later. And you know, that's what kind of got me into like actually just taking PC gaming seriously and enjoying it for what it is. And it's, you know, it's the unique way that you can play games with the accessibility of a keyboard and mouse. It's how your computer is more of a communications device, so like game chat's easier. And it's opened me to like a lot of great games that I've gone on to play and really enjoy the heck out of. Papers, Please, Among Us, I know I'm like struggling to think of things, but I mean it. I sincerely mean it. Like my Steam library has gotten pretty beefy since I've dived into this, and I could just say I'm thankful to Overwatch for that. Despite the fact that I think it's a very fun game to play with an impressive cast of characters that might be one of the most diverse in all gaming, and it's just got very fun modes and gameplay, it also just did something for me that I really value.
So, and it has Overwatch, one of the most toxic communities ever.
Yeah, that's why I only play with friends and not strangers.
Right. Yeah, the thing is, I've never played Overwatch on PC. I have it for the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, and the Switch. I have two copies for the Switch because me and Becca play on a Switch sometimes together because she'll play on hers. Nice. I'll play on mine, so we can at least go into a group together. And it is fun. It is super enjoyable. If you have a group, a big group of people that you can go in and mess around with, like I recommend it. I think it's a great thing. And like you said, a wonderful cast of characters, very diverse cast of characters too.
Hell yeah.
Bravo.
Hell yeah. Thank you. So Josh, moving right along, what is your number four?
So number four was a game from my, what do they call it? Not childhood, not adulthood, right in the middle.
Adolescence?
My adolescence, the teenage years, right? The angst years.
You're not
years.
A girl, but you're not yet a woman.
I'm super, super, you know, gnarly and stuff like that. But it all came in 2001 when my parents brought home an Xbox. And with that came Halo, one of the best water graphics I've ever seen in a game.
The wettest game of your life.
But that was the first time where I remember sitting down playing a game after I beat it and stuff, trying to dissect everything inside of it, trying to break the game, trying to do things that you just couldn't understand. Like, how I'm going to try to launch this warthog as high up in the air to see if it can go just disappear off the map. I'm going to try to go out in the middle of the ocean and see how far I can go. I'm trying to do all this weird stuff, go into the multiplayer games and just unlimited rockets, unlimited grenades, trying to see if you can throw something to have it launch in the air, and while it's in the air, have it explode again, and do all this kind of weird, crazy crap. And that was, I mean, the early 2000s, everything was crazy. Everything was extreme. Everything was electric, right? And it was just one of those things that I just remember this was what I wanted in gaming at that time. Like, there was nothing like it besides Amp Snowboarding, which is an awesome game too. But
that was a launch title. Oh, yeah.
I'm but, man, I am so thankful for Halo. And talking about it in our previous episode, when we actually did the entire playthrough of Halo, talking about what Halo did for the gaming community now, still to this day, I'm extremely thankful for Microsoft's creation of Halo. So Halo, Tom, yeah, it is, I'm extremely thankful for it. Like, what's your mindset with Halo after you've experienced it?
Well, my mindset on Halo is mostly formed by you. I think because I experienced it for the first time, beginning to end, in a co-op mode with you. So you guided me through Halo for the first time. Now, I'd interacted with it a bunch over the years, you know, multiplayer matches with friends who had an Xbox. I'm, you know, familiar that it's got a very deep lore that even extends into novels besides the sequels and prequels and spinoffs. So I think Halo is one of the cooler kind of franchises to have emerged from gaming in, God, the last 20 years. But, you know, it speaks to how gaming as a form of media is continuing to evolve. And, you know, the standards that we think are always going to stay in place, you know, who knows what could get shaken up. You know, it's like Mario is iconic and he's lasted for 35 years, but, you know, we're going to be hitting 20 years of Master Chief soon. So, you know, you should never disqualify a new kind of gaming phenomenon from hitting the scene. And I think Halo is very much an example of that.
I think it's pretty funny that you mentioned both of them and like the Mario hats here and then the Master Chief helmets right above.
There you go.
Right, yep, over my shoulder. Exactly. Like they're right there.
Iconic imagery. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Like, we don't, absolutely, even know what Master Chief's face looks like, but he's probably one of the most recognizable gaming characters ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Number four.
Yes. So this was the playground phenom that took 90s kids by storm. And, you know, this really kind of just majorly impacted my life. And it's Pokemon Red and Blue. And I'm thankful for it because this brought me closer to friends I already had. My childhood friend, Eddie, who you've met, you know, yeah, at least over a decade ago. Yeah. He and I are, you know, still talk. That's a relationship that was forged by this game, you know, by playing together, trading, discussing rumors we heard or things like that, just being caught up in the phenomenon. We went and saw the first movie together for my birthday in 1998. And that's, you know, one friendship, but it's very much just a game that like made me more sociable in, you know, grade school. I was kind of just an introvert to myself with like the friends I did have, but once everyone was talking about the same thing and I was like, oh, everyone likes a video game now I have the power, you know, like, so it was really fun and really engaging. And on top of that, it's a dang good game. I mean, I think Red and Blue are very much dated by this point. I would personally tell anybody that if you're going to experience the Kanto region, you should just play Fire Red and Leaf Green, because Red and Blue's balancing and combat systems in retrospect are super broken. So
if you're going to experience Kanto, you play Gold and Silver.
Right. Heart Gold and Soul Silver. Yeah, again, yeah. You know, but if you want that, if you want the first adventure,
that pure, yeah.
Yeah, you got to play Fire Red and Leaf Green. But what I'm saying is I'm thankful for Red and Blue for hitting the United States when it did and, you know, turning a hobby of mine into something that was a little bit more, I guess, socially acceptable and then just kind of opening me up socially as a result.
Yeah. So that was the first time I ever bought a game with my own money that I didn't know anything about. I only knew it
blind buy.
I didn't know anything about it. All I know is a lot of people were talking about it in school at the playgrounds. They kept saying how awesome of a game it was. And I was like, you know what? I have some, I think it was like birthday money or something like that. You know, I'm going to treat myself. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? The game sucks. And then I'm going to be upset that I spent $40 or something like that on a Game Boy game. And then I played it and my mind was blown. And I couldn't put it down. I really could not put that game down. And I owned Red, so anyone who had a Blue copy was stupid, and I hated them because they're dumb. Because Blue's the worst one, even though I never played. Lines, yeah, so. even though I never played Blue, like it was like, oh no, Red's the way to go. Red's definitely the way to go. Like, but yeah, it
poor Venusaur. Can we just talk about how like the generational passions for Red or Blue have almost borderline jumped into the side.
He got it in Leaf Green.
He did. But bringing Charizard back as Fire Red, it basically just situated that this is the cool one because we recycled him.
Fire's not cool, not plants. Red and Blue constantly keep getting remade, even to Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. Like, it's uh-huh. constantly getting remade or figuring out different ways to incorporate it into mainstream appeal. And honestly, Red and Blue have like this weird resurgence that comes back every like 3 to 4 years. It's like, when's the next presidential election? Okay, Pokemon Red and Blue should be good to go coming up. Like, it is weird though. Like, how many times has that game been remade?
I think it's just strictly because, I'm not going to lie, it's because of Charizard. It's because he was the mascot from one of those games, and Pokemon consistently trot him out. The newest Pokemon trading card game set, Vivid Voltage, released 6 days ago, and one of the theme deck mascots is Charizard. You know, we're so many years, so many generations away, and it's still like, hey guys, FYI, Charizard is the one of the most important Pokemon ever. You know, it's, I would argue that in the mainstream consciousness, the top three are probably Pikachu, Charizard, and Mewtwo. You know, like,
yeah,
those are the big three. So yeah, Red and Blue, it just lives on because they know people have that familiarity, that nostalgia. Josh, take us to your number three.
So number three is going to be I believe kind of shocking for some people because it's kind of newish. And
interesting.
This is a game that I never played before. I never played this game before. I never touched it. I heard people talk about it and I was like, I have no interest. I don't like it. I don't get it. However, this year I decided to buckle down and play it. And that is Animal Crossing New Horizon.
Oh, wow.
I am 100% thankful for Animal Crossing New Horizon because I don't like playing games with people. But since the whole quarantine happened and staying in our house and stuff like that, me and my wife we had a routine. Every morning we would get up, we would make coffee, we'd both go in. We had two TVs set up. She would turn on her game, I would turn on my game. We'd both go in, do all of our morning chores that we had to do together, take a look and see what's in each other's shops, go to each other's places if we needed to get extra items or trade in our turnips or whatever was going on. To the point where we threw her a surprise birthday party because she couldn't celebrate her birthday this year. So it was like me, you, I believe Mary was there, and like her cousins from Philadelphia were joining in the game. A whole bunch of our friends and stuff like that all came together. Like, this game took doing chores and made it fun, but I am so thankful because like we got to spend so much more time together doing something separately. It's weird. It is really weird because like we are both on our own separate islands, but we were together hanging out and we were talking to each other and we were singing the songs in the games together and we have them downloaded on our phones and like when we go places we sing and it I think it made the like our relationship so much stronger in a very stressful time. And I'm 100% thankful once again for Animal Crossing New Horizons.
I love it. I love that so much. And I agree with you completely. You know, that it is probably one of the most remarkable games ever made because of the circumstances of its release. But man, oh man, when I say that, like, it is such a significant game. It's going to go down in gaming history as like this is going to be a generationally remembered game. The way, like, I was just talking about Pokemon because of how it affected people's lives. In 20 years, you're going to have people doing, you know, New Horizons nostalgia. And New Horizons, in terms of Animal Crossing, I think that's going to be the standard for the series going forward. Everyone's going to say, like, but is this as good as New Horizons, you know?
Yeah.
But I 100% agree with what you were saying. Like, attending your wife's surprise birthday party was so fun and so charming. And I love that you guys had that experience. I love that this game was able to help you through what has admittedly been a pretty dark year. And the game, I could say, did similar things for me. It was a welcome distraction from being isolated and locked up in the house. And, you know, it was like a way to just have something to do that felt, you know, humans are creatures of habits. We feel comfortable when we have things to come back to. So that's just that charm of wake up, go talk to your neighbors. What's on sale? Is Red here? You know, things like that. So it's a hell of a game, and its wholesomeness, I think, is rivaled only by like just how cool it is to just enjoy. And yeah, I could easily say I'm thankful for that too.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know, man. It came out and the game got delayed to March 20th, and that was the best thing that could have ever happened for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh heck yeah. Nintendo knew. They knew what was going to happen.
So, Tom, I told you my number three, but now I think it's your turn.
You're going to get mad at me. Because we know from previous episodes, fans maybe will know from previous episodes that, like, Josh is someone who, when we say, all right, we're going to do a top five, he's like, well, I had 30 and I had a really hard time whittling it down to five. I had, and I'm usually like, well, I just barely got five. So this is all I'm going with. This is an example where I had a couple extra. And so my number three, I'm grouping them together, but hear me out.
Okay.
Number three is a tie between two combat games, and they are Call of Duty World at War Zombies Mode and Star Wars Battlefront 2. And it's just that these games have filled up so many just couch local multiplayer sessions in like my high school and college years of, you know, I have specific friends who it's like, if we even get together to this day in our 30s, it's like, you want to bust out Battlefront and just go through a quick Galactic Conquest or something? And I'm always like, hell yes, I do. And then like Zombies, you know, it's how I made a couple of my college era friends into like actual like friends for life, because it was just like this fun bonding experience of, you know, seeing how many rounds of zombies you could get through and perfecting strategies and all the maps. It's like, okay, you're going to be by that window there, and you're going to keep it constantly boarded up, and you make sure that we have enough credits when the box is ready, and blah, 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 you know, like it turned into this like strategizing and team building exercise that we would end up talking about like afterwards. You know, we would just, references to it would like infect our day-to-day vocabulary and things like that. And so, yeah, it's just two games that are, in my opinion, best with people. And I just have a lot of good memories of sharing them with people. And that's why I'm thankful for those two games.
I remember you were so, so into Zombies at World at War, to the point when I would go over to your house, you'd be like, hey, do you want to play? And I'm like, I don't like Call of Duty, but I'll play for you. Like, I don't like it, but I'll do it. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. Because it's so funny, because like at that time, you were so Call of Duty World at War, and I was Halo 3 and Halo Reach. And it was two completely different types of first-person shooters that we were really into. But I remember you were definitely into that more than I can even like remember games that you were like super like invested in. Right, it was like that, and it was Smash Brothers. Like those were the two things. But
yeah, and I should mention, I feel bad I didn't mention this, but just like also that was a big game, just with my brother when we were still both like living at home. Like Call of Duty is, I'll still buy Call of Duties nowadays just for the sake of playing them with him, because I'm like, yeah, this is like, you know, our game, you know, our core game.
But he plays the real Call of Duties now.
Yeah, he's an actual player character IRL.
Oh, so man.
Josh, we gotta move on. We're at your number two, are we not?
Yeah. So I was talking to Becca about this one. She asked why, and I explained to her, and she's like, oh, well, I didn't realize you're gonna get this deep. So this game, was a game that was there for me when nobody else was. All right. This game, so if a lot of people don't realize and know, I didn't go to college, right? I didn't continue my education. I went right into working because just you need 10,000 years of experience even coming out of college. So I might as well get this experience first. So at the time, all my friends were in college and I didn't have anything to do. All I did was work. But a game called Rock Band came out. and changed my life. It 100% changed my life. It gave me something to do. Like, it was like mentally stimulating almost, to the point where I got really good at it. And still to this day, I'm pretty decent at the game, but like, it was pretty one decent. Of those
arguably one of the best players of it I've ever seen.
But it was one of those things that anytime I was feeling upset or anytime I was like down in the dumps, just put it on, play it. And then, man, like two and a half hours of time just go by and just enjoying the hell out of just making music. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I can play real instruments, but like, why? I love Rock Band. And yeah, Guitar Hero came out before it, and I had Guitar Hero and stuff like that, but Rock Band was a different experience. Rock Band was just, it was never ending. It was different every time. And just, I loved every single thing about it. And I think, I don't know where I would have been mentally if that wasn't in my life at that time. That was the Animal Crossings of my 2010s.
Well, yeah, I can completely back you up. And I think you were a bit too modest there, that you got pretty good at Rock Band. You are the Guitar Hero hero. So logically, your skills just translated because you were following Harmonix as they, you know, switched things up. But yeah, I will speak 100% to the fact that you are just incredible at this music simulation game. And it does form the basis of some of like my best gaming memories with you, mm-hmm. is, you know, hanging at your place when we got chances to, and doing duets or doing competitive head to head or things like that, or just jamming out. And, you know, I think it's interesting. I honestly expected Guitar Hero to be on your list, unless you surprise me and then Guitar Hero's number one. I'd be like, oh, back to back. But, you know, I see why Rock Band's on here just in the basic sense, but I like what you said at the end that, like, you know, Rock Band felt different every time. And, you know, I think, I'll try to keep this as quick as I can because this could be like an episode long topic. But it's the fact that, like, Harmonix, who started the process with the original Guitar Hero before they left to go do it on their own with Rock Band, they were, you know, better at evolving the concept and making it feel fresher. Whereas once Guitar Hero was in Neversoft's hands, it was just more of the same, but with new songs.
Right.
Rock Band felt honestly transcendent because of how much new it added and how you could approach a song up to four different ways. So as you said, like, it just felt fresh every time. Do I want to sing this song? Do I want to play the bass line? Do I want to, you know, shred it out? Or do I just want to, like, you know, be on drums? You had options. And
the game had new songs releasing every Tuesday. Three new tracks you got, mm-hmm. every Tuesday. And to this day, new songs are being released every week to 2 weeks. Like, the game has not stopped releasing DLC since 2009.
Pretty incredible. How much space does that take up on your console? Just out of curiosity, because I know you've been getting picking up the DLCs for years.
Yeah, I have around like 600 to 800 songs on there. It's not, I mean, it's a pretty hefty chunk, but it's not as terrible as you would think. That's the only thing is every time I get a new Xbox, I'm like, God, I have to re-download all my Rock Bands.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so okay. Number two for you, Tom.
Well, okay, moving on. I just want to say, again, that's an excellent choice for you, and I am happy that you had Rock Band.
Oh,
I just
want to say you. That
because I know how much it means to you.
Yeah.
So, moving on for me, my number two is a game that I adamantly stayed away from, humorously enough, but it ended up being something that, you know, brought about connections to some very special people in my life, and it is The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. So the backstory on that comment I made is that I was not really aware of Zelda. Like, the N64 was my first console, and I never interacted with the first two or Link to the Past. And when I got an N64, I think I had Nintendo Power for a little bit in that era. And I remember like seeing all these ads and seeing all this coverage, and it was like Zelda, the 3D Zelda. And I was just like, this is a girl's game, because the main character is a girl, because I was a stupid boy of the 90s and I had stupid priorities. All right, I've come a long way.
Yeah.
But I saw, you know, the character with long hair and Link had his ears pierced, and I was like, this is a girl, I don't want to play this game. And So I remember it would have been 98. We go to Blockbuster because we went to the Blockbuster of Wilkes-Barre to rent games. And my sister wanted the game. So I rented Banjo-Kazooie. And then I was like, oh, go rent that Zelda game. That's a game for girls. So we, you know, come home. And while she's playing Zelda, I'm watching her. And I'm like, oh, whoa, this is like an actual cool, like fantasy, like epic adventure game. And then it got to the point where I was playing the game she rented more than I was playing the game I rented. And like, my mom was like, that's hers, you know, like, but I was like, no, I want it now. And then I was renting Zelda so much that my mom was like, you spent so much money renting this game. You could have bought it by now. And I was like, I'm a child. Don't tell me about money. But,
but you're trusting me with financial decisions.
But Zelda became this just like landmark in terms of my appreciation of fantasy, of, you know, adventure gaming. And I, you know, was a big fan, and I continue to be a big fan over the years. I, you know, moved on to Majora's Mask, to Wind Waker. And then in 2010, I met my now fiance Mary, and one of the first things we bonded over was the N64 Zelda games. It was just like, oh, you're like, you know, like, oh, so you're into that too. And it's like, talking about our favorite levels, our favorite characters, how we played the game. It's actually funny because I remember like the first time we played through it beginning to end, there would just be moments where I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, well, this is how you do it. And I'm like, well, it's not how I do it, you know, like when you have those gameplay differences and right. You just learn to appreciate how the other person experiences it. So it's a very important game in my life, both for how it opened my tastes up and how it helped me connect with someone special. So I'm very thankful for Ocarina of Time.
See, just imagine if you would have just continued in that mindset of saying, no, it's for girls, I'm never gonna play a game like that.
I would have been a real asshole.
A lonely asshole, almost. No, that's awesome. That is, I didn't know that's how you and Mary actually bonded over a game that came out on the N64. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. No, I understand the reason behind the love that everybody has for Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. One day I might actually beat it. I don't know. One day. But
I don't gotta beat Wind Waker first, but
that is true. I gotta beat Wind Waker first.
Well, Josh, I'm incredibly excited. Although I think I know what it is. Not to damper any of it, because I know why, if it is what I think it is. But anyway, getting to the point. I want to know your number one.
Okay.
Tell me, what is the game that you are most thankful for?
Okay. So the year was 1992. Okay. And I remember this pretty, this is like one of my first like major memories as a kid that I remember. My dad bought a Sega Genesis and he put that in our living room and he got NHL 93 for it. Or NHL, it was like NHLPA 93, the Players Association one. It wasn't actually like an official one. And he was playing that all the time. And in my bedroom, he put a Nintendo Entertainment System in it. And I went up to my room one day, and I never touched it before. I had no idea what I was going to do with it or anything like that. There was a shiny gold cartridge next to the NES. And I put it in, and I was taken to the world of Hyrule in the original Legend of Zelda. And I was 92. I was 3-4 years old-ish at the time. And my mind was blown. And it was the first time I ever physically played a video game. And it was the original Legend of Zelda. It wasn't Mario. It wasn't Donkey Kong. It wasn't any of those games. Nope, it was, it's dangerous to go alone, take this. And then you come out and that music hit and I was just mesmerized on this, and that was it. Just walked around every screen, just constantly killing stuff. Have no idea what the hell I was doing, but God, did I enjoy my time with it. And I still do to this day. The original Legend of Zelda, one of the best Zelda games ever made. But if that wasn't sitting in my room just as an afterthought And if that cartridge wasn't gold, I probably would never have even considered, you know, video games, or I would have had a different origin story. But Legend of Zelda on the NES is the origin story to me being huge into video games. And that's why I am extremely thankful for the first Legend of Zelda.
That's incredible. Oh, that's such a good story. You, at 4 years old, you had very cat-like logic. You know, you came into your room and you're like, huh, there's a box. Where does that box come from? And then if it hadn't been shiny, you may not have seen it. It'd be like, ooh, you know?
What's exactly. The shiny thing? Exactly.
If you could have had just a copy of Super Mario Brothers in there, it'd be like, it's dull and gray.
Yeah, it's gloomy. I don't care about that.
Literally,
I want the shiny
it was literally like a holy relic for you. Like, you know, you were like, da-da-da-da.
The light in my room was shining on the cartridge perfectly, blinded me. Ah!
And that's why you need glasses. You don't have that moment, you know. The game blinded you, but it opened your eyes in another way.
Exactly, yeah. So
I had lazy eyes, so that's why I don't need glasses. But no, that's an incredible, you know, that's an incredible just like moment of, you know, when art, you know, entered your life for the first time. Like I wish, you know me, I'm a movie fanatic, I'm a filmmaker, and I sometimes struggle to really sit down and go, what was the first movie I watched? Because it's not the same as a video game, you know? Like, you could have passive moments with movies in your childhood going so far back, but, like, for a video game, you gotta pick it up and engage with it for the first time.
Right.
So I think that is so significant that your first moment was something so just defining for you. That's incredible. I really love that story, and I thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
that
no
was
problem.
So cool.
No problem. Now, what is the top of your list, though, Tom? What is the number one thing you are the most thankful for in Vigigames?
In Vigigames. Well, as you know, the running theme of my list has just been like how games have helped me connect with people or maybe connect with myself. And I don't think any gaming franchise has done this more than this title, this definitive title within this series released in 2001 called Super Smash Bros. Melee. Melee is and might forever be the most seminal game of my life because I think I have not played any game more than this title, just cumulatively over the years. And, you know, the subsequent games that came from it, Brawl, Smash for Wii U, Ultimate, you know, I am obsessed with those games. And, you know, sometimes I have lull periods where, like, I step away from it a while. But when I come back to it, I always come back with just this passionate fervor because it's such a well-constructed fighter, even though, like, it's kind of classified as a party game or whatever. But, like, just as a competitive and just fast-paced game, I'm always fascinated by it. I like playing it and discovering new things about it. Like you were saying with Halo, like trying to find ways to push myself or push the game. And then when it comes to people, man, I have had the whole emotional scale of people with this game. I have almost gotten into physical fights over this game, which I think you should have a memory of one time that happened when we were at a certain someone's house in Sunbury playing for money, and someone almost beat me up over Smash Brothers.
Yep.
I have had moments of just pure joy of like finishing like an epic match and just like, you know, shaking the hand of someone I was playing with. I have like a multi-year ongoing rivalry with a friend of mine named Chris who attends MAGFest when I do. And we usually always end up meeting up in either like one of our hotel rooms or somewhere. And it's like, best 2 or 3, and I've never beaten him. He's an incredible player. He's played at like Evo and some big like tournaments. Like that's how good he is. But like, you know, I'm just like, 1 year I'm gonna do it, 1 year, you know.
But you gotta beat Pat first.
I gotta beat Pat again, like friend of the show, great person. That was the first time on our charity stream, which you can check out the highlights of on Twitch, you know. He and I finally got to play Smash Brothers together, and he wiped the floor with me. But you know what? I was just so happy that I finally got to do that with him. I had last just personal story, but in 2009 or 2010, I was at Kineticon in Hartford, Connecticut with my brother, and we entered a Super Smash Brothers Brawl tournament, and we ended up getting put on opposite sides of the bracket. And if you ever seen the movie Warrior from 2011 with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton, it was like, we were like getting closer and closer. And I was just like, I'm not going to be able to, I can't do this, but we got kicked out because we're not that good. But we were doing the whole like, you're my brother, I love him. Like just joking back and forth. So yeah, it's a game that I have probably the most amount of just unique memories from. And I'm just thankful that it's in my life. And I hope that Smash continues to just bring good times and good memories for many years to come, personally.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to find somebody out there who doesn't have some sort of a Super Smash Brothers Melee or Smash Brothers story in general. Mm-hmm. I remember I never touched a Smash Brothers game until I joined a tournament with you at GameStop for the launch of Super Smash Brothers Brawl. First time I ever did, I got to the semifinals. I had no idea what the hell I was doing in the game. I just was like, all right, I like Link. I'll play as Link. And after that, hanging out with our friend Steve and his brother Matt, like, all they ever wanted to do was play Melee. All they ever wanted to do was play Melee. No matter, even, they probably are still playing Melee right now.
No, they're playing Mario Kart 64. Okay. That's what they do now. But it's a fair point.
But that's the thing. Like, it's really hard to find someone nowadays who is into gaming who doesn't have some sort of a Smash Brothers story.
Yeah. It's like playing tag, you know? Like, everyone did it, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Everybody has played Smash. Like, it's a staple of Nintendo now. It is one of their main franchises. You got Mario, you got Zelda, you got Smash.
But I would legitimately agree and argue that, like, yeah, when a Nintendo console comes out, people want to know, what are those three entries?
How far is Smash away from this? Like, when the Switch launched, when is Smash coming?
Yep.
But Absolutely. That is it for our top five games that we are most thankful for. What are your games that you are most thankful for? Leave them in the comments. Let us know. Hit us up on Facebook or on Twitter or on Twitch or when we're on streaming. Let us know and maybe share a story or two about why that you are so thankful for that game as well. We shared here. Maybe you guys could share at a later time with us.
No, absolutely. You know, I get all mushy, but we're thankful for all of you, obviously, and we'd love to engage with you over this topic. It's a time of year for reflection and just, you know, considering what you have in your life. So tell us what kind of games are super important to you and, you know, you just are so grateful for. We would love to hear your stories.
But until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.